Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Hello, everyone. Today's Thursday, February 8th. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Gino. I'm here with Kevin. I'm here with Darren. Guys, got a lot going on tonight. Everyone, please listen to us. Anyway, you get your podcast, like, subscribe. Follow us on Facebook. Give us a like. Give us a share. Hit that button. Share that with your friends. Get that out there. We want it everywhere. We got a lot going on. We got baseball signings, NBA trades, the NHL halfway point. We got the Super Bowl in 3 days. We're going to get to that. That's right. We got some good bets for you. I don't know how good they're going to be, but we're going to give you some weird and wacky ones too. We're going to start it off with the NBA trade deadline that happened this afternoon. Kev, Knicks made a good trade.
Yes, they certainly did. So the Knicks traded Evan Fournier, also known as the expiring contract.
Expiring contract.
Malachi Flynn, we hardly knew you, from Toronto. Ryan Arcidiacono, who never played. The guys, President Guy's been with the Knicks for 41 games and scored 20 points.
And he's got the longest streak in the NBA history of 20 straight games without a point that he played in.
Exactly.
And he broke that streak by 7 games. The highest of it was 13. He crushed it.
And the one player they gave up of note was Quentin Grimes. 2 second-round picks only. No first going in the trade. In return, they get Bogdanovich and Alec Burke. I remember Burke's from a couple years ago. He was with the Knicks. You know what? They needed to make the move. And these were two good players to get. Randall's been out for about 2 weeks now with a shoulder. Not sure exactly when he's coming back. You know, he's got another 2 weeks probably before he's coming back. It was announced today that OG, he's been out for 5 games with the elbow. He went in for surgery for bone spurs in the elbow. So he's going to be out for about 3 weeks at least. So they need to do something because you're playing some of these guys for 40-plus minutes a night. Brunson twisted the ankle the other night. I think he's out tonight. I mean, the Knicks were – I mean, tonight they're shorthanded. I don't know what they're doing yet. I'd be surprised if it's even competitive. But this is a move they had to make. They had to get through because they are moving their way up. They're right in the middle of that logjam, battling for that second spot in the East. And they needed to survive the injuries. Once everybody's back from injuries, boy, they've got depth. Darren.
One quick point on the NBA deadline and then about this trade.
Yep.
It should be an off day. There's so many trades that go on the day of, and so many teams are shorthanded. It's not mine. I was listening to WFAN, and one of the announcers mentioned it, and I thought it was a great idea just because so many teams are shorthanded. And at the end of the season, it comes down to one or two games to get in sometimes or to get the home seed. It just seems like it's a little unfair, not just because we're rooting for the Knicks, but in general, you know, it's like it should be all around. Bogdanovich is a hell of a shooter. He's probably a little lesser of a defensive player than Grimes, but more of a microwave, like an old Vinnie Johnson type that can really get things going on the offensive end. Anunoby, you knew he was hurt. They were hiding the injury for 2 weeks, and they did what they had to do. You just can't let your competitors know and the teams that are competing with you to jack up the price on you because they know that you desperately need it. So they were able to get the trade, didn't give up any of the ones, which was really crucial for this team. I mean, they dealt a couple of twos. I mean, and everybody just throws around twos all over the place. I don't even know how many twos everybody has. Some teams have eight and some teams have none.
It's surprising that it's surprising when you look at the second round. It's surprising when you see a team that still has its own second round pick at this point.
It never happens. You're 100% right. And usually the second round is generally a guy that played college for 3 or 4 years and not a really young kid who may have blossomed late in his college career. It's very rare you get a young stud or you get somebody from overseas that you may not see for 2 or 3 years. So the second round is always a crapshoot, and you could get somebody great, but you know what? You know, more than willing to give up 2 second-round picks. I thought Detroit got let the Knicks get off easy. They got the expiring contracts they wanted. I understand everything that they're doing too, but at the same time, the Knicks easily had an A in this trade, in my opinion.
Yeah, ESPN gave them the A. They gave Detroit a C+ in their rank. And I think a lot of that is because they didn't give up any first rounders. Pistons did not get any. I mean, that's...
Yeah, listen, Bogdanovich is 41% from three over the last two seasons. It's a good shooter. Burks is a good backup for Brunson. He can come in there. And he's played with Tibbs. So, you know, Tibbs has a little confidence in him at least. You know, he's going to just put him in there, let him play. But, you know, the big point is that over the last whatever you want to call it, I'm not sure what the date when they got OG in, but between Anunoby and Precious and Bogdanovich and Burks, they brought four players in here and gave up no number ones. You know, if this team gets healthy, you know, hopefully in the next month, whatever, month and a half, you know, they put themselves in the position that this is going to be a really competitive team here now. I mean, you know, you got a lot of chaos up above them in the standings. So in the East, so, you know, this is it, man.
They're virtually a game out of second. I don't think anyone's gaining the five on Boston. They're just too good. And Kev will touch on a couple of those trades as well. But the Knicks are a solid team. They have probably more depth than anybody in the East at this point when you go 1 through 10, 1 through 9. Tibbs already has his, you know, his roster, I think, relatively set of where he's going to do and what his rotation will be in the playoffs. Always the question about Tibbs is simple. His teams play so hard every night. They don't always have that extra gear when you get to the playoffs where teams step up. The Knicks have been stepping up all year kind of thing. So we're going to find out what Brunson's all about as we get into the playoffs and if he's the leader of this team. But anyway, let's get back to the other trades there, Mr. Ward.
Yes. So we'll start with the Eastern Conference and some of the leaders. Boston with a big trade, I thought. Getting Xavier Tillman from the Grizzlies for Lamar Stevens. A 2027 second-round pick from Atlanta and a 2030 second-round pick from Dallas. And we're talking about 2030 picks. I mean, incredible. But what Tillman does is it adds to their big man rotation. That was one weakness Boston had. You're sitting there with Porzingis and Horford, who, you know, you're not sure about the injuries and how much stamina they're going to have. So Tillman was, you know, they addressed one weakness its roster really had.
I mean, Tillman's not going to kill you with his stats. He averages 6.5 and 3.5, something like that. Nothing really special, but he can go in and bang.
Yep.
He's another big body. That's what they need.
Yeah, he can go in and bang.
Yep. Cleveland did nothing. Milwaukee made a couple of moves. Milwaukee, I've got them right here. They added Patrick Beverley. They were sitting there looking to shore up their defense. Their defense has not been well. Has not played well this year. So Beverley gives him the perimeter D. Only had to give up Cameron Prime to the 76ers. Decent three-point shooter, but not really needed on the Bucks. And they gave up a 27 second-round pick.
Yeah, not really part of the Bucks rotation. Pat Bev's a guy you love to hate, but when he's on your team, you like him. It's pretty much the way to describe him. He gets under everybody's skin.
Yep. And then you've got Philly. Philly made a couple of moves here. Their big move was getting Buddy Hield. They got him from
Indiana.
Indiana, thank you. For Marcus Morris Sr., Korkmaz, and 3 second-round picks. This was a trade with all three players who are on expiring contracts. Philly needed a shooter. You know, first they've got to get Embiid healthy because they have been playing so poorly with Embiid out. Once Embiid comes back, they needed 3-point shooters. They were near the bottom of the league in 3-point attempts, 3-point makes for the season. So getting healed gives them that 3-point threat that they so desperately needed.
Yeah, I mean, Buddy came over in that trade, that Sabonis Haliburton deal. He was part of that deal that went from Sacramento to Indiana. He's a good shooter. He'll always be a good shooter. He was a great shooter in Oklahoma, great shooter in Sacramento, solid shooter in Indiana, and he will help that team's perimeter.
And then they also
too many notes, Kev. Too many notes.
I know. I should have been a little more organized.
Don't worry about it. We put you on the spot.
Yeah, then they traded Jaden Springer to the Celtics for a second-round pick to open up the roster spot because they're looking eventually at getting in some of these buyouts. Springer was not in the rotation. Celtics got a developmental player. He's 21 years old, hasn't shot well yet, but they needed some depth down the line for whatever they were looking
Gino,
at.
Gino, quick question for you. Does it sound like Kev's more of a Celtic fan than a Knicks fan lately, or is it just me?
No, definitely more of a Celtic fan than a Knicks fan Kevin, at the moment.
Because his son roots for the Celtics. Now, all of a sudden, Kevin, these are teams that are rivals. How do you switch over to the Celtics so quickly? No answer.
Wow.
Anyway.
What other
big trades happened today, Kev?
All right. So we've got Phoenix making the move, getting Royce O'Neal. In a three-team trade with Brooklyn and Memphis. Royce probably fits in there as a close out the games when you're in there with Durant and Beal and Booker.
He's an athletic wing.
That's probably one thing that they had room for on that team. Nets get Jordan Goodwin, Bates Diop, and 3 second-round picks. Memphis gets Yuta Watanabe and Chimezie Metu.
Easy for you to say.
I love it when you get the good names. The Nets don't have an identity of what they're trying to do here.
No.
Because the
other trade that they made also is similar. Anyway, go ahead, Kev.
Yeah, they made a trade with Toronto to get Dennis Schroeder for Spencer Dinwiddie from the Raptors.
Yep.
They also picked up Thaddeus Young.
Who was a former Net. He played well here. I mean, but yep. At the same before the big three came and demolished this team. But the Nets, I don't know what their plan is. It's like I know they have enough picks, and I know they have some tradable players that they can move in order to try to secure a superstar type player. But does a superstar want to come over here and play with Bridges? It's the interesting thing, you know. I mean, but the Nets. I don't know. You don't know if they're like half pregnant all over the place. They don't know if they want to kind of go for it or if they kind of want to rebuild and instead they stay put. And what staying put gives you in the East right now is battling between 9 and 12. You know, yeah. I mean, 8 and 12 maybe.
Yeah.
They're an interesting team. And the Knick trade, the only thing interesting is I was surprised that they allowed them to trade one of the Villanova kids. Adichie Akino. With all the other Villanova kids on that team, I'm surprised there wasn't more of an outrage from Brunson and Hart and the rest of the boys.
And all right, what else you got, Kev?
Also in the East, Indiana gets Dougie McDermott, if you remember that name, from Creighton.
Yep.
I remember right. For Marcus Morris, who was waived, and a 2029 second-round pick. I mean, it's amazing, like we said before, these picks. Indiana gets Corey Joseph from Golden State for a second round pick and then turns around and waves him.
Yep.
That I don't know what they were doing there. The Toronto Raptors also picked up Kelly Olynyk. They needed some center help. They gave up Otto Porter Jr., Kira Lewis, and a 2024 first round pick, the least favorable of OKC, LA Clippers, Houston, and Utah. With different draft protections in there, I mean,
All right.
That's the other thing about these trades is when you start looking at these draft protections, it's just incredible. Minnesota, out west, they get Monte Morris for Shake Milton, Troy Brown Jr., and a 2030 second round pick. for Minnesota, this gives them a quality backup point guard. 40% threes of this year. He's a free agent to be. Just like Milton and Brown, they did not have guaranteed contracts for next year. Detroit gets a look at two younger guys on non-guaranteed deals. They get a pick, and Minnesota gets another quality point guard there.
Is there a time limit on how far in the future they can deal picks?
I think 30 is the latest they can deal.
So they can
right
go out. I
think it's six. I think it's six years. I'm not 100%.
All right. Go ahead, Kev.
Two more. The Oklahoma City Thunder, they pick up Gordon Hayward from the Charlotte Hornets for Trey Mann, Vasily Micic, Davis Bertans, and some draft picks, which were still to be determined. OKC gets the best player in the trade. We'll see what the draft compensation turns out to be, but OKC also looking at the summer. That's the expiring $30 million contract, so they'll open up some room for themselves in the offseason. And Dallas, this one didn't make sense at all. They get forward PJ Washington from Charlotte for Grant Williams, Seth Curry, and a top two protected 2027 first round pick. To me, PJ Washington is slightly better than Grant Williams. I don't think he was a big enough upgrade to get a first round pick.
He just has more length. So I mean, Grant is more physical and PJ's a little bit taller. I mean, I agree with you, Kev, on your analysis on it. If they wanted to have somebody that was just a couple inches taller and able to, you know, make it harder for three-point shooters to shoot, man, that's the only reason why I could think of it. He averages a little bit more points, but also Grant was not on teams where he was allowed to shoot much. So we'll see what happens.
He was on Boston and a few other teams.
Yeah, pretty much. Anything else on the Celtics, Kev, before we move on?
No, I'm done with the Boston Celtics. In case my son decides to download, I give him a throw him a bone with the Celtics.
Dallas also brought in Daniel Gafford from Washington.
They did. That's right.
Oh, yeah.
Another player.
Nice kid out of Arkansas.
Yeah.
All right.
Anything else on trades or
top five? I think we covered the trades. I mean, I guess what it comes down to now is, you know, the NBA, we're 2 weeks away from the All-Star break here, basically. So it's coming up real quick. The teams, you know, the East's top five or six seem to have separated themselves pretty easily from the rest of the pack. At least the top five have. You know, Philly falling back a little bit, but you feel like when Embiid comes back, that'll level itself out. Boston, Milwaukee, Cleveland, and the Knicks are all up there. And then Indiana's kind of just lurking right off that pace, but I like the roster they have right now. I think Indiana can bother anybody. Very important to get a one or a two seed, particularly a two seed if you're the New York Knicks.
Yep.
Because you'd like to avoid Indiana or Philly in that first round if you can, in my opinion.
Yep.
Rankings. Yeah, let's do some power round. Why don't you lead the way, Kev?
All right. Well, I'm going to go with who my buddies claim is my favorite team. I'm going to put Boston number one. They're four games ahead of everybody else in the league. So they're there. Number two, even though they don't have the best record in the West yet, I'm going to put the Clippers at number two. Going into as of this afternoon, they were half a game behind the top three, but there's just came off a 6-1 road trip. They are 31-9 in their last 40, and they are playing really well. Number three, I'm going with the other hot team, the Cleveland Cavaliers. They have moved up to the number two seed in the East. They've won 7 in a row and 15 of their last 16. I'm going to cheat a little bit here. Four, I'm going to put a three-way tie. OKC, Minnesota, Denver, all three are 35-16. Flip a coin between which ones, but I want to leave the spot. I want to leave number five open for the Knicks. They are 10-1 in their last 11. Despite all the injuries, they are 16-3 since the trade. They deserve to be in the top five. So that's how I'm cheating. I'm doing three-way tie for fourth.
Well, usually what that would mean is
I know.
Gee, you want to go?
Maybe I'll look at my power rankings. I can make my own rules.
So I have mine are very similar. I have Boston one. I have the Clippers two. I have OKC at the three. I have Denver at the four. And I have the Knicks at the five also. And I was just trying to get them in there. I don't have Cleveland in there, although Cleveland is just playing lights out lately. So 9-1 in the last 10. So
I'm a little more similar to Kev. I have Boston one and Cleveland two, actually. I have Cleveland as my number two. I have the Clippers as three. I also have the New York basketball Knicks as the four. The Knickerbockers get in. And I have OKC as my five with Milwaukee and Denver lurking right behind. And how ridiculous. I mean, I don't have Dallas in there. I mean, Doncic is averaging 35 a game. Kyrie, when he plays, that the playoffs should be really intense in both conferences. The top six in each league are really good. And we should have some really good basketball down the stretch. Minnesota should probably be listed on this. For some reason, I didn't have them on there. They're tied with OKC, you know. It's going to be exciting. The NBA should be fun this year, guys.
Hopefully, yep. Yep.
All right.
It'd be nice to see them have fun and have some openness, you know, where you have several teams in contention.
Okay. Go Celtics, right, Kev? I'm teasing you, right?
Wow. Wow.
We're going to move over to some NHL. They had their All-Star weekend. Boy, that is a shell of his former self when we used to see the All-Star game play. And I'll tell you, I put some of it on this weekend. It's a shell, man. Skills competition is interesting, but the little three-on-three matchups and stuff, wasn't a big fan. Kev?
What? I didn't watch any of it. I've watched it years past. Would you rather see three-on-three and all that stuff, or would you rather see five-on-five and having 16-15 hockey games?
You know what? I'm actually more in the four-on-four range. I know it sounds so stupid that it's that big a difference, but to have two defensemen and two forwards with someone protecting the freaking goaltenders who are just getting lit up every chance that they turn around because there's no one. The reason why whatever team it was won it was because they played one forward and two defensemen. They actually sat there and helped out their goalie. It was just so I can't remember which one. I didn't watch it, so I'd be lying to say I did.
I think it was Connor McDavid's team.
Yeah, whatever it was, they actually went 1-2 instead of a 2-1, and they won. It might not have been because of that reason, but I just think 4-on-4 is a little bit interesting. I don't mind, I guess, the round robin, but I think all-star games are all done in every sport. I don't see any interest or any excitement. I think the skills competitions are fine. I don't think the game itself means anything.
Well, we could talk 2 seconds about that, because I don't know if either one of you saw it, but I actually saw some of the flag football.
Didn't watch a second of it.
Oh, that's
dude, it's an Olympic sport in 4 years. They're trying to make sure they have it.
You know what? Rough. That's another one that.
Let me put it that way. It's rough.
But the Pro Bowl, nobody played defense anymore. Nobody gave an effort anymore. So,
well, they don't do that in the regular NFL either, Kev.
Yeah, half the time you feel like they don't. So you know what? Let them play flag football.
All right.
Remember when they played beach football? Robert Edwards, the rookie running back on New England, like tore his knee and his career was over.
Well,
they did like a beach Saturday or something like that. Some kind of weird thing. I was fine with the Patriots. So I mean, sorry for Robert Edwards.
They took that away. They put in more football related.
Yeah. Redirecting back to the NHL, guys.
Yes.
Let's do power rankings. Right now, everybody's just starting to get everything going in the NHL again after the All-Star break. Darren, why don't you start off with power rankings, NHL?
Vancouver's my one. I think they're just playing really good hockey. Boston's the two. They're the best team in the East, even though they lost to the Flames the other night, which was exciting for me, 4-1. Number three, even though they finally lost in their 16-game winning streak, I put in the Edmonton, the hated Edmonton Oilers for me. Four, I have Colorado, even though they lost twice this week to the Rangers and the Devils back-to-back. And fifth, I put in Florida, who I think is playing really, really well right now. Just playing good hockey. So that's my top five with Dallas and the Rangers lurking. Kev?
A little different order here. I've got, just like you, Vancouver won. And it was funny is that while Edmonton was going 16-1 in their last 17 games, Vancouver went 12-2-3.
They're great.
So they barely lost any ground. I know Edmonton's third in the division. Two, I went with Boston, best in the East. Three, I did put Vegas up there, figuring they did beat Edmonton. They've been playing pretty well lately. Four, I kept Edmonton. You know, 16 in a row, you've got to give them somewhere in the top five. And fifth, I put in the Rangers. They've won three in a row now. They seem to maybe have righted the ship a little bit. They're back up in the division by 6 points after it got down to about two ahead of Carolina. And I've got Colorado and Dallas lurking.
The one thing I'll say about the Rangers, they've gone to quick a couple in a row. Out of the break, everybody's healthy, and they've gone to quick. So that means that there's a question that you're hearing about Shesterkin's confidence. Apparently, he gets very down on himself when he gives up a goal. Apparently, he has a hard time overcoming it. But they are not going to win a cup if it's – and Quick is great, but he's 38 years old. They're not going to win a cup with Quick. They need to get Shesterkin back. But, yeah, there's
– And he's too good not to get back.
Yeah, he's
in the game.
it's funny because you sit there and you look at the locals, you know, right now, and we'll go over to Eugenio in a second. But you know, the Islanders have Wah, and that makes it kind of exciting to see what they're going to do. Sorokin actually has someone of same, if not better, caliber to go over things with, which is kind of cool. The Rangers have finally found their step, and the Devils got used back, even though they're going to lose to the beloved Calgary Flames tonight as they trail 5-3 late. But, you know, so the locals are all doing pretty well. G, where's your top five going here, bud?
Very much same kind of five you guys have. I have Vancouver at the one and Edmonton at the two. They're too hot to take them out of there at the moment. Boston, three. Colorado, four. And like Kev, I got the Rangers at five. Listen, they were really hot. They calmed down. Now they got a little win streak going on, so I got them at five. The rest of those teams just lurking right there. Dallas, Florida, they're all, you know, bunched up a little bit right now. That's my top five. Darren?
One last point on hockey. I think we just have to talk about the biggest thing that's off the ice with Canadian hockey a little bit. There's a woman that was 20. I'm not sure. I think she's 24, 25 now. So in the Canadian hockey for an event that happened in 2018, you know, the woman sued and in 2022 was paid money, but now it's a criminal investigation by the Canadian authorities. She was apparently sexually assaulted by eight members of the gold medal winning World Junior Canadian Hockey Championship team. And the players that we would know that are involved, Carter Hart, who's the stud goaltender in Philly, Michael McLeod and Cal Foote, who play for the Devils, Cal Foote, Adam Foote's son, by the way, from the old Colorado Avalanche. Whoa. Dylan Dubé from Calgary, and a former guy that was in the NHL, a guy named Alex Formenton, who played for a little bit and now is playing overseas. All five players, attorneys have stated that they're all innocent. And now we have to find out if we have a Greg Hardy or we have a Duke LaCrosse. We got to find out what really happened here. But it's just another little black eye for the sport. And, you know, and it's one of the biggest topics that's going on in Canada right now. So just something we'll keep an eye on. All the teams have been given some salary cap relief because of it. So we'll help teams as they get ready to go to the deadline and stuff like that for teams that need to add on. Because again, a team like Philadelphia who's playing great, but they're gonna have a hard time overcoming a loss of like Carter Hart, probably the best player listed out of the ones that we discussed. And that's time will tell how this goes, but that's been running around for about 3 or 4 weeks that I've known of, and just figured we'd share it on the cast here.
Yep.
All right.
And for the NHL, their trade deadline is March 8th.
Yep, coming up.
They get real close to the end of the regular season before their trade deadline.
I actually kind of like it better.
Does it now?
I actually like it better because you know who's in it. And you know if you're in it or out of it by that point, if you want to make the move.
How much of the NBA trade deadline being this early is driven by the players so that after the deadline, you see these trades for veterans that they get waived or buyouts and everything else, and gives them a chance to find teams so that they can go chase a ring.
Well, the NBA,
because we know the NBA is such a player-driven league.
It's a players' league. That's what it comes down to. I think everything is an acquiesce to the players. And listen, you know, we're all employees, not employers, for where we work. So you know, you see that it's kind of like cool the way some of it works. But then if you root for a team that never has an opportunity, it's not that cool. I mean, for years as Knicks fans, right? How often did we really have an opportunity to get better? We couldn't get out of mediocrity to below mediocrity for 2 decades. Now you finally you signed Brunson, and he became the guy that you didn't realize he was going to become. We thought he'd be good. I don't think any of the three of us thought he was going to be a stud. And we watched him for 4 years in college. We watched him through his Villanova years. We knew how good a player he was. You know, he's a little short, he's a little slow, but he's crafty. You know, you thought of him that way more. And he's none of those things. He plays physical when he has to. So, you know, so it makes the NBA tough. When these guys all decide they want to go to Miami or they want to go to L.A. or they want to go wherever, it makes it really hard on the middle-level teams that are trying to make something happen. But I agree with you, Kev. I like it a little later. I think it's just better for the sport. There was one other point. Forget it. We'll go to another thing. Don't worry about it.
All right, we'll shift to baseball. Cool. Some couple of trades, some signings. Orioles wind up getting Corbin Burns from Milwaukee for two prospects. Orioles really trying to shore up the rotation. Giants send Ross Stripling to the A's. Still a lot of rumor mills out there, which Snell going to the Yankees. Not happening at the moment, but still a lot of rumors out there. We had some signings. Mets signed Shintaro Fujinami. Little bullpen help.
Big arm, and he walks the ballpark. If they can get him to have control, he will be a good pick for player for you guys. He's got
to
just
got to find a nice garter belt to put on him, let him breathe through his eyeballs, you know, all that magical stuff, and he'll be
like
perfect.
Like the turtles.
Mayan. Is it Aztec or Mayan, Gino? Is it Aztec or Mayan?
Dodgers bring back Kershaw for a 17th season. He's not due back to the summer from the arm injury. Today, the Rangers signed Adolis Garcia 2 years. A couple of big signings. The Royals signed Bobby Witt to a long-term contract. It's 11 years for $288 million. They're trying to at least have a put a new face to the franchise.
I actually like what they did there a lot just because, you know what, they're not going to be able to compete with him in 5 years when he's able to go. So might as well sign him to the long-term deal. It's not overly expensive where if you feel like you have to deal him, you probably can if you think you can get other prospects back. But they can build around for their next run. Like the Hosmer run that they did a few years back.
Yeah. Astros signed Altuve to a 5-year extension worth $125
million.
He'll be an Astro for the rest of his career.
I don't think that's huge. You know, I think that was pretty fair. You know, he's not getting 30 plus million, but it gives him a nice, you know, for the next 2-3 years.
Yeah.
He's still going to be a very productive player.
Yeah. Yankees, by the way, made a trade with the Dodgers. They picked up Caleb Ferguson, a little bullpen help for them.
I actually like that move.
You like that move?
I thought it was okay. I didn't think it was a bad move. I kind of like Ferguson. I mean, he kind of fell apart down the stretch last year a little bit. But early on in the year, he was pretty strong. I don't know. I think he's got a live arm. And we had to replace Wandy. You know, I thought it was okay.
The only other baseball news I have is that apparently the mayor of Las Vegas, in a statement, urged the A's to find a new place for their stadium, that they should stay in Oakland. Later, she clarified that it was because they rejected the first site for a stadium, which she had outside, basically, of the basic strip. So... little controversy going out there. So,
and then she praised the A's right after that, an hour later. It's like, whatever.
Any other baseball news?
A baseball stadium on this trip, I don't know. That's just a little tough there. Hey, two other Mets signings. You missed Diekman, the lefty reliever.
Yep, Diekman finally signed.
And Darren's favorite reliever of all time, Adam Ottavino, resigns.
I mentioned him last week, Kev.
Oh, was it last week we mentioned him?
We mentioned Ottavino. Diekman had not signed yet, though.
I didn't mention Diekman. I mentioned Ottavino last week.
You know, I mean, listen, he's great early in the season, and then if you decide not to swing at the sweeping slider, you're going to walk. Or you sit on your fastball when he finally throws it. But, yeah, no, listen, baseball's coming up, everybody. We're going to be doing a baseball preview show in the next few weeks, and real excited. We'll hopefully have a guest on for that one, and we'll have a little fun.
Before we get to college basketball, that's where we're going next. I just have one NFL point to make up, not related to Super Bowl. I was very unhappy with my Commanders signing Dan Quinn to be the head coach when Vrabel is just sitting there doing nothing, apparently. Belichick is sitting there doing nothing, and I have to now suffer with Dan Quinn, who couldn't win a damn Super Bowl a couple years ago. That's who my head coach is now.
28-3.
And Cliff Kingsbury is my offensive coach. Thank you very much. And that's my little 1-minute rant about the Commanders.
I would take Bieniemy in a heartbeat to be the offensive coordinator of the Jets. I don't think Rodgers would, but I would.
No.
He would hold guys accountable. He was the tough guy in Kansas City. That was his job. He was the mean one. And I don't think the Washington players liked it either. Anyway, I'm sorry, Kevin.
Andy Reid could be the nice guy there.
And he loves it. He's good at it.
And one other just miscellaneous point we're going to throw in before we get to college basketball, and that is last week we had the unfortunate passing of Rocky legend Carl Weathers, Mr. Apollo Creed, who passed away at the age of 76 last week. Football player, had a nice career, wound up being a pretty good actor.
Former Raider linebacker, Chubbs Peterson. Lots of roles. He was the club champ. Chubbs Peterson. It's a shame to see he was Action Jackson. He had a lot of roles, and he played a couple of years with the Raiders as well, number 49. He will be missed. Rich Caster, a guy that I never saw play, neither did my friend Kevin, but it was a good tight end who made the Pro Bowl a couple of times. He passed away this year, this week, I should say. I'm not sure exactly how old he was, but you guys know Bill.
He was 75.
Yeah, you know Bill, his wife, he works for Caster's wife, so he had met Rich Caster. Wow. So, you know, the small world that kind of comes together. I mean, NFL, and we'll get into the Super Bowl last, because why not?
Well, it's time to get into a little college hoops, Darren.
Let's go. Me and Kevin go back and forth.
What's going on? College basketball is back, baby.
So much happening. Every week is crazy. Kev, you want to make a point first?
Can I do the upset of the week?
Go ahead.
Unfortunately, it was the wrong team from South Carolina this week. Clemson goes into North Carolina and knocks off number 3 UNC 80-76. Raises Clemson's record all time at UNC to 2 wins and 60 losses. Yes, you heard me right. 6-0, 2-60.
They have always been a house of horrors. The thing about that game that was so interesting, Clemson led most of the way. Carolina storms back, ties it up at 70. And you're saying to yourself, okay, 4 minutes to go. That's Carolina it. Just finds a way. And then PJ Hall comes right down, gets a three-point play, and basically Clemson never was threatened again. They get a stop. A lot of bad shot selection, but that's what you love about college basketball. These kids come down and shoot it when they shouldn't, and it makes it a little bit more of a dramatic game, and the upsets are allowed to happen. And no, it was actually fantastic. But we had a ton of good upsets again this week, Kev. Every week. Game of the week, by the way, to me was Purdue 105, Northwestern 96. Went to overtime. Collins goes nuts after the game because the foul shooting was Purdue took 46 foul shots, Northwestern 8. And he just went crazy. He was going nuts on the refs. Then he ran across to make sure he shook Painter's hand, hugged Edie, and then he stormed back off after the refs again. But that was a really good game. Northwestern's a real good team, so it's really good to watch. Wisconsin goes down 0-3 this week, by the way. They lose to Nebraska, and then they lost to Michigan, and in between they lost at home to Purdue. So they had a really rough week. They went in ranked 6th. The Nebraska game, they led by 18 on the road and blew that game. So one of those things. Another team from the same great state of Wisconsin that went down twice, Creighton. They lost in the highest scoring non-overtime Big East game in like years, 99-98 to Butler. And then they come back and they lose to Providence 91-87. So Creighton has to right the ship a little bit. Texas went into TCU and won 77-66. A tough home loss for TCU after they went into Baylor and won. San Diego State beat Utah State. Utah State went 6-for-23 from the floor. Utah State was ranked 17th going into that game. That one was 81-67. Hard to win at San Diego State, Kev.
I was going to say, then Utah State follows it up Tuesday with the losing against Nevada, 77-63.
And that was at home. Yeah. And that was a home loss to a Nevada team. And when we get into the Mountain West, there's six teams that have between 16 and 19 wins that are really close in the overall scope of everything. And, this is a league that doesn't always do great in a tournament, but San Diego State made it to the championship game last year. So, they're alive for six teams, legitimately alive for that. Tennessee, Kentucky, another great game. Kentucky does not play defense this year. That's what we've come to learn. 103-92. Tennessee usually doesn't score 100 points. That's how bad Kentucky was defensively in this game. UCF beats then number 23, Oklahoma, 74-63. Nice upset for UCF. Really good. That's the best league in the country. SEC is good. The Big 12 is better.
Big 12 is the best, yep.
Cincinnati goes into Texas Tech and wins 75-72. Road win at Texas Tech, who was in first place at the time in the conference. They've since lost again. But, tough road loss at Baylor. You don't beat them up for that. But you don't expect them to lose that one at home to Cincinnati, who's playing really good basketball. North Carolina Duke, the biggest rivalry in the country, 94-84. Great game. Carolina was just too much for them. Then they followed it up with that loss to Clemson, like you talked about, Kev.
But remember, Baycott, the ACC runs through me, and then they follows it up with losing to Clemson. What has Baycott done in 4 years?
Yes. Listen, they did win a win a title.
Thanks to, was it a lot with him?
What was that?
Was it much thanks to him?
He was a factor. You can't say he wasn't a factor. He did win a championship. It's hard to kill him, but I understand your point. St. Mary's goes into the kennel and wins at Gonzaga. Now neither team's ranked, but Gonzaga, you know, losing at home, and then the crowd was just getting unruly. They were throwing stuff on the court at the end of the game, and it's like, you know, they're not used to losing at the kennel. And St. Mary's just kind of took it to them. They were a better team all night, to be honest with you. They were a better squad. They've won 11 in a row. St. Yeah. Mary's is 19-6. They have a shot of getting an at-large, even if they don't win. I think they'll get an at-large, even if they don't win the conference tournament.
I think so, too. And Gonzaga's an interesting case because their computer numbers are fine. The NET, the BPI, they're both top 30. I just don't see the quality wins right now.
Well, the Gonzaga's net is 26.
Yeah.
And they're 0-5 against quad one teams. I don't understand how they figure out this net. And I'm going to go in. I have 10 net confusions for me at the end of this. Kansas State, who's been an enigma because they can't score, they win the Sunflower Showdown by beating Kansas 75-70. 11 straight overtime victories for Kansas State. They get to overtime, they find a way to win. And they beat Kansas 2 years in a row in that. And, you know, Tyler Perry, not the guy you know, goes off in second halves. G?
Kansas really had problems shooting the ball. I watched a lot of that game. Kansas, they really can't shoot the three at all, but they were like, Kansas State had them completely off balance for a huge portion of that game.
Kansas State plays the ugliest game, not the ugliest, but one of the ugliest games you're going to find out of anybody. Like Mississippi State's much uglier, but Kansas State's kind of ugly, little physical. That guy Furphy, who didn't play well that night, usually is the guy that's shooting lights out. Wagner's a hell of a point guard. He makes a lot of plays. He's got the long arms, makes deflections, kept them in it by himself, basically. I don't know what they're doing with the big kid. They have him outside too much. Get Dickinson inside. Let him score. He's 7-1. There's nobody that's going to be able to cover him down low. I don't know what the offense is, and every time they get him on the block, he gets a little hook shot. I don't understand what Kansas's offense is, not to criticize Bill Self. Kev?
I was going to say, Kansas, much like UNC, they both played Saturday. UNC, of course, we mentioned, beat Duke. Kansas with a 78-65 win over number 4, Houston, at the time.
Yep, absolutely.
And then they followed up for them 2 nights later, losing at home to an unranked Kansas State team, much like NC loses to Clemson.
Yeah, it's just one of those things.
It's just one of these that, you know, you come off these big wins. Sometimes you have that down.
No, you're right. And then the other one, it was a slight upset, but another big game on Saturday. Baylor 70-68 over Iowa State. Again, they broke the tie with 2 seconds left. Great game. Iowa State is so hard to play to. They're really, really good. St. John's, just to mention him, because that's our local squad here that we grew up kind of rooting for. They played UConn. They fell 77-64. It's actually a pretty close game for, I don't know, about 30 minutes, and then UConn kind of took control of it. Patino's doing, I think, a good job with this team. They missed the floor general. The one guy I wish they didn't get rid of, and I know Storr is the leading scorer over in Wisconsin, and people think that, but the loss of Posh Alexander that can kind of control the floor and not having the true point guard, they have Dennis Mitchell kind of running it. He should be playing off and scoring because I think he just runs out of gas late in the game, and he's just shooting flat shots, and St. John's just doesn't seem to hit big shots against the big teams. But you remember, Rick Pitino's Iona team was the only team that had a lead at the half last year against UConn. Yep. Gino and I were in AC, and Iona had a 2-point lead at the break, and they were up as much as like 7 or 8 in the first half. And then, Connecticut exploded, beat them by over 20, I think 23. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, if Pitino can get himself into the tournament, no one's going to want to go up against him and coach against him. So really good stuff there. Oklahoma beat 21 BYU, 82-66. I don't think anything's an upset in the Big 12, but just by rank. So any other games you want to touch on before we go through conferences a little bit, Kev?
Yeah, last night, the SEC, Auburn 99, Alabama 81. The big thing in this game, 85 combined free throws.
50 by Auburn.
Yep.
They hit 40.
That knocked both of them to 8-2 is the three-way tie at the top of the SEC.
I mean, when I go through the SEC, and please don't take it the wrong way, to me the most complete team is still Tennessee, who you guys beat. I just think that they can do both things. South Carolina's, though, you know, Parrish is doing an amazing job with that team. They play great defense. I love the kid, Stu. I just love the way he can shoot it because he's long and he can. I like them at Vandy. They're a real fun team. When we get into the SEC, when I look at it, I see Tennessee, South Carolina, Auburn, Alabama, and Kentucky. They all look good to me. You don't even worry about it. And then you have a bunch of teams on the bubble with Ole Miss, Florida, A&M, Mississippi State, Georgia. These teams are all on the bubble. The SEC could have anywhere from 9 to 10 teams. I don't know if you see it any differently, guys.
I've got definitely 8. I think they're a pretty safe bet for 8.
I think it's a lock for 8. I'm just wondering if they stretch it to 9.
It's going to depend on some of these other schools. It's going to depend on what some of the other conferences have.
Now, Mississippi State knocked out off Georgia yesterday. They needed to. It was a home game.
Yeah.
And when they can actually shoot, they're dangerous because they just kill you on the offensive glass. By the way, the Knicks lost 122-108. It's just a real fun conference. South Carolina they've held up.
Well, you know, if you look at Little Mon Paris, you know, he spent the last couple of years. This is the second year at South Carolina. Yeah. He was at Chattanooga before that, but he was an assistant under Wisconsin. So he's used to that defensive system, and he's really carried that over to South Carolina. Limit the possessions, don't turn the ball over, and play good defense. And that's what South Carolina is doing.
No, absolutely. Since we mentioned it before, Mountain West, Kev, all 6 teams are – I mean, Boise State probably has the weakest resume, but they're tied for first.
Yeah.
And they're playing well, and they were in the tournament last year. Every team in that conference lost in the first round except San Diego State, who made it all the way to the championship. Are all 6 teams alive, in your opinion, too?
All 6 are alive, yeah.
How many do you think they'll end up getting?
I think they're going to get 5. I think one's going to get squeezed out, but I've definitely got them with 5.
I mean, good coaches there. Alfred taking over at Nevada. I mean, they got some strong stuff going on there. G, any thoughts on that? You have 5 also?
Yeah, right now I got them at 5, but this is obviously way early. But, yeah, I got them at 5 right now.
Listen, this is going to change every week because college basketball, you have 2 road games, you lose them both, and everybody has a heart attack. Then you come back the next week, you have 2 home games, you win them both, and everyone thinks you're great again. It's the oddest thing in the world, but that's the way it goes. Let's go to the ACC real quick, boys. So North Carolina, Duke, and Virginia to me look like the 3 teams that look good. You know, you could put Wake, you put Clemson's big win, I think, helps them. Vatek is still on the bubble, I guess. Miami, Florida State, even though they don't have good, even Florida State doesn't have a good net at all, and maybe even Pitt. Do you think anybody gets in besides the big 3?
I think at least one more gets in.
I would agree. I think they wind up getting 4 in, depending on how Wake and Clemson right now, you know, continue right now. One of them could be the 4, but as we go through this, we'll see if anybody else, you know, creeps into that upper echelon.
So it's going to be a story throughout, you know, ACC. They've got 8 teams between 7 and 4 and 5 and 6 in the conference. Yep. SEC, we mentioned, you know, Alabama, Auburn, SC at 8 and 2, Tennessee at 7 and 2, 7 others between 6 and 4 and 4 and 6. And we're going to see this on all these big conferences. There's so much muddle in the middle. You don't know which team is going to step up. You know, who's going to go on the run late and get 3 or 4 wins. You know, make the run to the semifinals in their conference tournament to clinch a bid also.
No, agreed. Let's go to the Big East real quick. So UConn is UConn, and Marquette looks great. Shaka Smart's got them playing well. I had Creighton as a team that looked really good. Then they lost 2 in a row. But I still think they look strong. Then you have Seton Hall, Butler, Xavier, St. John's all in the bubble with Providence sneaking in there a little bit too. I think Villanova's falling off the bubble. So what are you guys thinking? How many teams do you think are getting out of the Big East?
I think they can get all the way up to 7. I really do.
I have them at 5 right now. We'll see. But I have a whole bunch of teams on the outside right now. So
I have it at 6. So Kev's got 7. I got 6. And Gino's got 5. But it's close. I don't have Providence in. And I don't have Xavier in. But I do have Butler as like one of my last 4 at this moment. That could change. Seton Hall, even though they don't have a great net, they actually play really well against Quad 1, and I've been impressed with what I've seen from those guys. Big 10 guys. So Purdue, Illinois, Wisconsin did look good up until the 3-game losing streak. I guess you still like them. They were ranked 6th in the country. And then you have a logjam with Northwestern, Nebraska, Michigan State. Even Indiana, Minnesota, and Iowa could be mentioned in there. It's not the best year I've ever seen for the Big Ten.
Yeah, I think they're a little bit weaker than they've been the last couple of years. I've got six of them in there, just like Gino. You know, the conference, you've got, like you mentioned, Purdue, Illinois at the top, Wisconsin off the losing streak a little bit here, but you've got seven teams between 8-4 and 5-6 in the conference. Again, common theme.
Yeah, absolutely.
No doubt about it. The one thing I'm going to ask you guys, just because he's a legend, if Michigan State doesn't get in again this year, is it time to move on from Izzo? He's a legend. We don't live in the market.
Yeah.
But listen, and when was the last time Izzo really won something big?
Yeah.
It's been a while.
It may be.
Big 12, best league in the country. Houston, Kansas, Baylor, Iowa State, Texas Tech all look good. BYU, TCU, Oklahoma, Texas, even K-State and UCF are all on the bubble. The only two teams I don't have in the bubble are West Virginia and Oklahoma State. The other 12 teams are all there. This league I have 10 in. I don't know what you guys think. I have 10 out of these 12.
I've got 9.
Who's the one that you don't have that I have? I'm just curious. I don't have the two I mentioned. Plus, I don't have Kansas State, and I don't have UCF.
I had 9, and I don't have Kansas State in.
I don't have them in either. So I'm just saying. So there's one other one.
Yeah.
There's one other one, though. Because out of these teams, Houston, Kansas, Baylor, Iowa State, Texas Tech, BYU, TCU, Oklahoma, Texas.
That's my 9.
Okay, that's 9. Oh, I'm missing one. Okay, no, 9. Okay, I have 9, too. I'm sorry. Okay. I thought it was 10. My bad. I'm doing the math wrong.
That's okay.
We all have 9. Pac-12, only lock I have is Arizona. I think Washington State's pretty good. I think Arizona is in a battle right now with Utah. It's a one-point game in overtime. Utah coming back from 15 down. Utah, Colorado, Washington State all battling, I guess. I don't think anybody else is even in Oregon, maybe. Those are the only teams in consideration. How many think are going from the Pac?
I've got 2 or 3 at most.
I have 3.
I'd be surprised if it goes over 3.
I have 3.
Rhea, right now I have Colorado, I'm sorry, Washington State and Arizona. Those are the only 3. If Utah wins this game, which they're up 1 with 111 to go in overtime, that could change things a little bit. SEC.
Wait, before you get off the Pac-12.
Oh, we did SEC. Sorry, my bad.
Yep. Is this a weird one tonight, Darren? Washington's playing Oregon, and Washington State is playing Oregon State. Is that like
they do it every time? And now Washington State will play Oregon on Saturday, and Oregon State will play Washington Saturday. So it just so happens.
I saw that today, so I'm like, that's kind of weird.
The Pac-12 actually does road trips, so okay. you play the NoCals, you play the LoCals, you play Stanford and Cal, UCLA, USC. You play the Arizonas, you play the Washingtons, you play the Mountain teams. Or you play the Oregons.
Okay.
So you always have that Thursday, Saturday, sometimes Wednesday, Saturday. Every now and then they move one to Sunday. So we covered the major conferences, and we'll get more in-depth in it as we go. Big games this week. The one I'm talking about right now, Arizona-Utah. Utah needs this game. Dayton-VCU. Dayton's 19-3, coming off of the loss to Richmond a week ago. They're pretty much in good shape to get in that large regardless. VCU's battling. They're fourth in the league right now. They can climb up to second with a couple wins here. San Diego State at Nevada tomorrow night. That's another huge one. Kev?
Yeah, I was going to say, Dayton, there's 4 conferences that have got definitely the winners or the leaders right now who I think have a really good chance of making the at-large if they don't win their conference. That would be the American. I've got Florida Atlantic in there. The A-10, I've got Dayton in there. Missouri Valley, I've got Indiana State in. And the West Coast, I've got St. Mary's in.
I kind of agree with all 4 of yours.
And again, assuming they don't flame out here and lose first round big or something, I'm talking, you know, at least make the semis of your conference tournament and, you know, take care of business that way. If you lose in the semifinals or the finals, they think they're safe.
Yep, Grand Canyon's another team because the net is so good that we could look at, but they're not there yet.
Exactly. It's Grand Canyon, it's McNeese State, Samford, James Madison, all have great records. The other 3, the net is not as good, but, you know, if they run the table up until their conference finals, you know, you got to have the pushback saying, yeah, they've lost, but, you know, these are teams with 3 losses.
Nope, you're right. I agree with you.
Out. And, you know, we like to see the small conference get a chance too once in a while.
No doubt about it. Other big games this week, just to go through them real quick. TCU at Iowa State's a big game for TCU to try to bounce back, also for Iowa State to bounce back. St. John's goes to Marquette. That's a tough one for the Johnnies, but if they could get this win, it would solidify them a little bit. K-State goes to BYU. K-State needs to get that road win. Boise State at Utah State. Every game in the Mountain West when the top teams are playing is big because they just jumble back and forth. Auburn goes to Florida. Huge emotional win against Alabama last night. Florida, I'll touch on them in a minute. They need a little bit of still a little bit of help, in my opinion. That's a big one for them. Illinois goes to Michigan State. Michigan State wants to get into the tournament. They got to win this home game. Gonzaga goes to Kentucky. That's Gonzaga's like the interesting thing we talked about. Kentucky doesn't play D. Neither one has been that impressive. Kentucky better than Gonzaga, though, so far. Houston visits Cincinnati. Cincinnati wants to solidify themselves. Nice home win against Houston thus far. UCF visits Texas Tech. UCF has to win a couple of these road games to get in. North Carolina visits Miami. Does North Carolina bounce back off the loss to Clemson? They need to. Baylor visits Kansas. Probably the game of the weekend.
Yep.
Baylor and Kansas, in my opinion.
That's the only one between ranked teams.
Yep, 13-4 going at each other. Indiana-Purdue. Indiana's got to start making some hay if they want to get into this tournament. Otherwise, Mike Woodson will be out of a job after this season. And Arizona-Colorado. Another big one for Arizona is the one team that these guys all want to play because it's the only good net win that they can all have.
Yep.
So 10 quick points on nets, and then we'll go to the NFL, all right? Indiana State, 20-3, 1-3 in quad one games, yet they're 22 in the net. I don't know how this net ranking works, okay? Michigan State, 14-9, 2-7 against quad one, 1-5 on the road, yet 24.
Wow.
Gonzaga, 16-6, 0-5 against quad one, 26. Colorado, 15-7, 1-4 against quad one, 1-6 on the road, 30. Wake, 15-7, 0-3 against quad one, 33. Florida, 15-7, 1-7 against quad one, 39. St. John's, 14-9, 2-7, 42 net. South Carolina, 20-3, 3-2, 43 net. Now, if somebody can explain why South Carolina is behind any of these teams, by all means, and I'm not the Gamecock fan, that's Kevin, but come on. Seton Hall, 15-8, 4-4 against quad one, 66. Nebraska, 16-8, 3-5 against quad one, 57. So, I mean, I just give you an example of three teams that are below 50 and, well, below 40, and seven teams that were 42 or above, and I just don't understand how they come up with the net ranking.
So is the net ranking giving you points for losses against good teams?
They do because a little bit. They reward things like that, but the fact of the matter is you got to beat good teams to get in. I don't love this net.
No. The only reason I say that is other than Gonzaga, the one thing that most of those teams have in common is they're playing in good conferences with a lot of other good teams. That's the only thing I can think of. But when you have
and Michigan State's playing teams and losing to them. Kansas State's got a net in the 70s, G. K-State's got a net in the 70s. They're playing the Big 12.
Okay.
I'm just saying Minnesota's got a net in the 80s. They're 15-7. They're playing the Big 10. So I don't know what Michigan State's done so special to get them to 14-9 with a 2-7 record, a 1-5 on the road. I don't even see their net being this good. It's just the way I look at it. And then just final, you know, St. Mary's, the longest winning streak in the country right now, at 11 at the High Point loss the other day. Grand Canyon, UConn, Houston, Purdue, Indiana State, High Point, Samford, McNeese State, and the South Carolina Gamecocks. Those are the only teams with 20 wins so far. A few more will join this week, but those are the first 9 to 20 wins. Any other points on college, Kev?
I think we've covered it pretty well today.
Good enough.
And we will continue with Darren's question marks on the net ratings as we go through this in the next month.
Next week, I'm throwing in BPI and RPI as well because all this stuff bothers me.
All right.
Teams have to beat good teams. You just don't get to play them and get in.
Agreed. I agree.
G?
Well, what's amazing, just real quick on that then, you know, because I did look at the BPI also. The one conference that RPI, not the RPI, the net ratings, I should say, The Mountain West, you know, between Utah State, Boise State, New Mexico, San Diego State, Colorado, looking at those five, the net ratings, the worst one is Boise State at 36. Both of them are in the New Mexico is even 18.
Yep.
The other ones are in the 20s. You look at the BPI, the best one is San Diego State at 36. Utah State's in the 50s. Boise State's in the 50s. Colorado 74 in the BPI, 28 in the net.
It's a then
how can they have that much of a difference?
And then and they're using the net more as the tool.
Yeah.
Which I just don't understand how they can't come up with something that actually makes sense. The old RPI was the best. It was better than the BPI and it's better than the net. Sorry.
One win against quad one team should not have you ranked that high. I have news for you.
Oh, Wake hasn't beaten anybody. They're 0-3. And, you know, I'm a Wake fan. They're 0-3.
Your offensive efficiency, your defensive efficiency, the difference between them. It's a predictive model. It's all the math. It's all the stat heads. It's all the sabermetrics, however you want to call it.
Last point on college before we go to the NFL, Jake, was Dartmouth actually, they have players that are that have sued and had something upheld in court where they are actually employees. So now Dartmouth is fighting back. This will change the entire landscape of college sports as we know it. If they win this case,
yeah.
And you know, I listen, there's people that love college sports like the three of us. None of us are really happy in the direction it's going. Not that we don't want to see the players get played, get paid, but we don't. We want to see them play at equal dollar amounts across so that a team like Vanderbilt, a team like Wake Forest, a team like Washington State, a team that plays in a big conference doesn't have the big budget, can compete with the other teams in that conference. You'll never see a quarterback. You'll see Sam Hartman say, I can make more money at Notre Dame and I'm going to leave Wake Forest. Ohio State, and I don't know how they signed seven superstars already off the, you know, basically free agency with NIL deals, you know, because people are opting out all over the place. So a little concerned about the sports we love, guys. Back to you, Jake.
All right. 3 days from now, Super Bowl in Las Vegas. Taylor Swift in attendance, flying direct from Tokyo. Tokyo government says they are going to help her get there as quick as possible. And San Francisco has, at this point, is a 2-point favorite against Kansas City. Over-under is 47.5. We're going to get to our picks in a couple of minutes. Let's get to a couple of weird, wacky bets. Scorers. To score a touchdown in the game, I'll give you the easy ones, and that is Kelce at minus 110, McCaffrey at minus 220. If you like the quarterbacks, Purdy at plus 550, Mahomes at plus 425. If you like the big receiver, Ayuk or Debo, plus 135, plus 150. If you go a little further down the list now, you can have Rashee Rice at plus 130, right in that range, right, Kev? Yep. But then we get to some weird ones. Kittle actually is plus 145, so he's right there. Marcus Valdez-Scantling, plus 600. And here you go, for either the defense or the special teams to score. For San Francisco, it's plus 500. For Kansas City, it's plus 550. The Geno special to score a touchdown. That's right. The tight end special, Noah Gray. It's plus 900. That's the Geno pick on the weird and wacky touchdown scorer. You can have Noah Gray at plus 900. I got a couple of weird ones, and that is if you think Kansas City is going to start off fast, but San Francisco may win the game, you could have Kansas City first half, San Francisco for the game at plus 400. If you like it the other way and say San Francisco gets off to a fast start, San Francisco wins the first half, but Kansas City wins the full game, that's plus 650. And Kansas City to win the first half, Kansas City to win the game is at plus 195. So that's a couple of little ones. The Scorigami is installed at plus 2,000. origami, just to give everybody a recollection, is when you have a unique score that has never been done in the NFL before. We had one of those this year, actually. That's a plus 2,000. Kev, do you like the Gatorade colors? If it's plus, if it's red or blue, it's plus 350. Yellow, green, or orange is plus 300, Kev. You can have the yellow, green, and plus 300.
Oh, boy.
A couple I like, I'll tell you right off the bat. Pacheco over 70 yards rushing, plus 105. I like that one. That's one of mine. And Marcus Valdez-Scantling over 1.5 catches is at minus 115. I like that one as well. And here you go, Darren. Yep. If you want to tease Kansas City to plus 7.5, you can have them at minus 358 on the money line. Not a great odds, but you could you could tease them up there. And if you want to tease San Francisco down, if you think San Francisco is going to win by a touchdown, you could tease San Francisco to minus 6.5, still covers with a touchdown, plus 196. That's actually interesting. Not bad.
It is.
Okay. Right now, money lines are just not really good with these two teams. These two teams are close. There's a lot of money coming in on both sides. Kansas City's plus 100. It's even money. San Francisco's minus 120 on the money line. Again, right in the range. Nothing odd, nothing crazy. You can have, and here you go. Here's the Geno special. You ready, Kev? Here it comes.
All right.
Kansas City plus 2. Mahomes over 200 yards passing. Pacheco over 70 yards running. And Noah Gray to score a touchdown is 27-1. And that is the Geno special bet of the Super Bowl. All right.
Kev, don't bet $1 on it, though, Kev. Bet a 10. Bet a 10.
I was thinking about $1.50.
San Francisco minus 2 is the line. Kev, let's start it off with our picks for the Super Bowl.
All right. Kansas City making their fourth trip in the last 5 years. San Fran, this is their second time in the last 5 years. Of course, they lost to Kansas City in the Super Bowl 5 years ago. You know what? We've been watching these two teams all year. If you said before the season it was going to be a Kansas City San Fran Super Bowl, I don't think anybody would have necessarily disagreed with you. You're picking chalk, you know. Preseason, I know Darren and I both picked San Fran to win the Super Bowl.
All three of us, actually.
Oh, yeah, all you have them too?
Yep.
Okay. Yep. I think you had them to win it also. I just think Kansas City, this is the best defense that Kansas City's had with Mahomes' era. They can give up a few early, but then Spags is able to figure things out, make some adjustments. I think they're going to have a close first half, and then Kansas City's going to come out. I don't think San Fran's defense is all that great. They're very good, but they can be scored upon. I think Kansas City can win this game 35-20.
So you got Kansas City in the over. Okay.
Yep.
G?
All signs point to me betting San Francisco, and I can't do it. There is something with Mahomes right now that tells me that he's winning this game. The only thing I can liken it to is some of those years with Brady where you thought there wasn't the best team out there, and Brady found a way to get everything in control. The one advantage I think Kansas City has here is this is Purdy's first time in a Super Bowl. With this team, it's the second time, but this is Purdy's first time, right? And it's a different halftime than they're used to. I could see San Francisco starting off slow, Kansas City getting out to a little lead, come out in the third, after this long break and Purdy's off a little bit, maybe an interception, maybe they just don't connect on a couple of these passes. I'm going Kansas City minus the points. I think it's 24-14, so I like the under. Kansas City by 10 in the end, but I think it's Mahomes raising another trophy. Darren?
Yeah, like broken record here. We have a very competitive game on paper. 49ers were my favorite coming into the season. Thought they would play the Bengals, so obviously I didn't have this. I didn't even have the Chiefs to win the AFC West. I had the Chargers. They were the best team in the league most of the season, the 49ers. They have a ton of offensive weapons. McCaffrey, Samuel, Kittle, Ayuk, Purdy. They have a bunch of different guys that can get it all done. And on defense with Bosa and Hargrave and Warner and Greenlaw, they have the star power. They have more stars. The Chiefs have Mahomes, and they have Reed, and they have Spags. I'm not saying they don't have a lot of other stars, but you want to go with the more complete 1-53 team, or are you looking at the quarterback, coach, the coordinator that makes adjustment team? And listen, I've been on them all every game in the playoffs. I picked them to beat the Dolphins, picked them to beat the Bills, picked them to beat the Ravens, and I'm going to pick them again for Derek Thomas. They're going to win Super Bowl 58 for number 58, and I think that they're going to find a way to win this one 21-16. So I have the under. I think this will be more of a defensive game than Kev does. Again, it's going to come down. The Chiefs have to limit McCaffrey. They have to get Pacheco going. The 49ers have to contain Mahomes, and they have to utilize Kittle. I think the Chiefs will be able to stop that a little bit. I think the Chiefs find a way to in a tough one. So I think the Chiefs win it. I could see San Francisco winning this game too. It's not like it's much of a love affair. It's hard to bet against Mahomes when he's playing this well right now. 4-0 lifetime in Allegiant Stadium. 10 touchdowns, 1 pick. He's been good there. Give me the Chiefs. 21-16. Boys, any other points before we wrap this thing up?
21-16 would be a hell of a final score, Derek.
You know why I picked it, Gino, don't you? We're in a big box pool where we have the 1 and the 6, so I'm going with it.
That would be a hell of a final score, man.
Kev, were you saying something or were you whispering something? I could hear you.
Oh, my mute. That I never sounded better.
It was just like going through the NBA trades all over again.
I have the 5 and the 0 in my big box pool, so therefore
35-20.
So I'm the only one that didn't do that. Okay.
21-16. I thought about 31-16. I thought it was a little greedy. Anyway, any other points before we wrap it up? We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Darren here with Gino, here with Kevin, talking about the wonderful, wild, and wacky world of sports. Please download the podcast anywhere you get a podcast. Anywhere you can download a podcast, I should say, whether it be an Apple product, TuneIn, Spotify, whatever you like. We share stuff on social. Like it, share it, like our page, follow us, follow everything we do, and let people know about us. We're going to be talking very heavily about college basketball now, very heavy about the NBA, very heavy on the NHL. And we're going to be doing baseball previews all going on over the next couple of weeks. So without any further ado, may your sports be with you.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.